Welcome to EAN Cast, your weekly source for education, research, and updates from the European Academy of Neurology.
Hello, and welcome to EAN Cast, weekly neurology, the weekly audio podcast by EAN. My name is Cristian Fallo Pecurariu. I'm professor of neurology at Transylvania University, Brașov, Romania, chair of Department of Neurology, Clinical County Hospital in Brașov, in Romania. I'm co-chair of Autonomic Nervous System Disorders together with Professor Anpa Villatron, member of the program committee of EN, past chair of Education Committee of MDSES, former member of Executive Committee of MDSES and International Executive Committee of MDS. This month's topic is autonomic nervous system disorder, and in today's episode we will talk about the gastrointestinal autonomic dysfunction in movement disorder. My guest today is Dr. Valentina Letta from Carlo Besta Institute from Milan in Italy. Valentina is a neurologist working as a movement disorder consultant, neurologist and researcher at Fondazione Instituto Carlo Besta from Milan. Valentina is interested in both motor and non-motor aspects of movement disorders with a focus of device-aided therapies and autonomic dysfunction in Parkinson's disease. She has completed her PhD project on gastrointestinal dysfunction, inflammation, and gut dysbiosis in PD under the supervision of Professor Ray Chowdhury at the Parkinson Center of Excellence at King's College, London. Welcome, Valentina, and thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having me, Professor Fallo Pecurariu. It's a pleasure to be with you today.
So, one topic, why are movement disorders associated with gastrointestinal dysfunction?
Well, movement disorders are often associated with gastrointestinal dysfunction as part of autonomic dysfunction. And this is probably due to the close link between the enteric nervous system, the so-called second brain of human body, and the central nervous system. So this link, the gut-brain axis, which is mainly characterized by physical bridge, the autonomic, so the parasympathetic and sympathetic fibers, as well as by the immune-mediated communication and hormones, is crucial for human health and is involved in different diseases. And this might partly explain the frequent association between movement disorders and gastrointestinal dysfunction. Gastrointestinal symptoms may occur at any stage of different diseases, from the prodromal to the advanced phases. And when we talk about this association, it is important to distinguish primary movement disorders, which can display some gastrointestinal symptoms, and diseases, which might be systemic diseases, where we might have neurological symptoms such as movement disorders together with gastrointestinal symptoms. I'm referring to diseases such as celiac disease, Wilson's disease, Whipple disease, which will not be the focus of our conversation today. We will primarily focus on primary movement disorders associated with gastrointestinal dysfunction.
Thank you. And the second topic would be related to gastrointestinal dysfunction in Parkinson's disease. What is your view? What are the literature?
So certainly Parkinson's disease is the condition where we know more about the association between the two aspects, the movement disorder and the gastrointestinal dysfunction. Parkinson's disease is a synucleinopathy, a neurodegenerative disease, where gastrointestinal dysfunction may occur at any stage of the condition, from the prodromal phases to the advanced phases of the condition. And we know that the pathological hallmark of Parkinson's disease, so the pathological misfolded alpha-synuclein deposits, which are typically located at the level of the substantia nigra, can be also located at the level of the enteric nervous system. And this might partly explain the gastrointestinal manifestation that we can observe in people with Parkinson. Virtually every person with Parkinson's might have some degree of gastrointestinal dysfunction, and the entire gastrointestinal tract might be affected from the mouth to the rectum. We can start from the upper gastrointestinal tract, so we have drooling of saliva, which can occur in up to 80% of people with Parkinson, is more frequent in men and in the advanced phases of the condition. It is troublesome also because it can lead to social embarrassment in association with the possible perioral inflammation. And we know that this is something that is very prevalent and troublesome for patients with Parkinson's disease. From a pathophysiological point of view, we know that actually in people with Parkinson's, there is a reduced production of saliva, but we have a faster excretion of saliva, and also there is a reduced clearance of saliva because of multiple factors. For instance, the flexed posture of the neck, the tongue bradykinesia, as well as the hypomimia, generally speaking, and also the oropharyngeal and esophageal dysmotility. So all these factors can contribute together to the manifestation of drooling of saliva. And then if we move down, we have, of course, dysphagia. Dysphagia is another gastrointestinal manifestation which is often under-recognized. And actually, if we look at the data using objective outcome measure, it is present in up to 80% of patients with Parkinson's disease. And it's very important to identify such a problem because it can lead to aspiration pneumonia, malnutrition, weight loss. So it's relevant in our clinical practice to identify dysphagia. And from a pathophysiological point of view, both the oropharyngeal and the esophageal phases of swallowing are altered in people with Parkinson's disease. And then we have gastroparesis, delayed gastric emptying, which can be completely asymptomatic or can be associated with dyspepsia, nausea, inappetence, and abdominal bloating, pain. Here we know that the stomach pacemaker, the casual interstitial cells, they are actually well functioning in people with Parkinson's. So probably the delayed gastric emptying is related to some abnormalities in the vagal innervation of the stomach, together with other possible factors. There is some evidence suggesting that the levodopa, so the dopaminergic intake of medication, can also affect the motility of the stomach. And again, it is crucial to identify gastroparesis in our clinical practice because, number one, it's prevalent, number two, it's troublesome, number three, can lead to problems with the transport and absorption of levodopa, the gold standard treatment of Parkinson's disease. So we have each tablet of levodopa needs to go from the mouth to the small intestine to be absorbed. And if I have a lazy stomach, then the time of transport of this tablet through the gastrointestinal tract will be prolonged. And as such, also the chances for this tablet to be prematurely metabolized by different enzymes that we have in our gastrointestinal tract will occur. So it's important to also think about this other aspect. And then if we look at the lower gastrointestinal tract, constipation is certainly the main manifestation of gastrointestinal dysfunction in Parkinson's disease. It is relevant to talk about constipation because it is a very well-known prodromal feature of the condition, and it's also common and troublesome for the patients. And when we talk about constipation in Parkinson's, we need to distinguish between slow transit constipation, so we have reduced speed, the reduced motility of the intestine, and outlet constipation, which is mainly due to a dysfunction in the anorectal muscle, so probably related to dystonia. So this is essentially the variety of gastrointestinal manifestation that we might see in people with Parkinson's disease.
Great, thank you. Thank you, Valentina. So you talk about the levodopa transport and absorption. Could you please comment on the gastrointestinal dysfunction as a barrier to levodopa transport and absorption, please?
Thank you, Christian, for this relevant question. This, in fact, is something that we always need to take into consideration in our outpatient clinical activity when we manage people with Parkinson's disease. We know that levodopa is the gold standard treatment for Parkinson's disease, and particularly in the initial and medium phases, let's say, in the initial phases of the condition, we usually use oral formulation of levodopa. So the problem is that levodopa is usually absorbed in the small intestine, in a very, very small portion of the small intestine. So the tablets need to reach the small intestine from the mouth through the esophagus and the stomach before reaching the site of absorption. And given what we have discussed together, so all the different gastrointestinal manifestation, dysphagia, so with the oropharyngeal involvement, with the esophageal dysmotility, with the delayed gastric emptying, we can already imagine how many barriers the tablet of levodopa might find throughout this journey. So certainly these elements can contribute to the delay of the transport. So it might take longer for the tablet to reach the site of absorption. And this can contribute to some motor and non-motor fluctuations. Let's think about the time to on, delayed time to on or dose failure. These are barriers that can contribute to this manifestation. And also, we don't need to forget that if the time of transport is prolonged, we have an higher chances for this tablet to be prematurely metabolized before being absorbed through the gastrointestinal tract, because there are several enzymes, COMT and so on, which can metabolize prematurely the oral tablet. So then the levodopa will not be absorbed properly. And I guess that this is something that you frequently see in your clinical practice, Christian. What do you think?
Yeah, it's true. Actually, this is the basis of some troubles that we have in the clinics, and you explained very nicely this. Thank you. And this was the Parkinson's disease. Could you comment, please, the gastrointestinal dysfunction in other synucleopathies? I think this is a relevant topic as well.
Yeah, we will mainly focus on movement disorders because of synucleinopathy. So to be honest, we know that most of the clinical and research knowledge on the topic are related to Parkinson's disease. But we have something also, some information about other synucleinopathies such as Lewy body dementia or multiple system atrophy, MSA. So in relation to Lewy body dementia, DLB, we know that this is a neurodegenerative condition, again, a synucleinopathy with pathological deposition of alpha-synuclein, which is mainly located at the level of the cortex, the limbic system. But we know that also the peripheral nervous system is affected in this condition, as well as in Parkinson's disease. And it is typically characterized clinically by Parkinsonism, hallucination, fluctuation of the level of consciousness, and also dysautonomia, including gastrointestinal dysfunction. Indeed, some abnormal deposition of alpha-synuclein is also seen in subjects with Lewy body dementia at the level of the gastrointestinal tract. And this is something that might also help in our clinical practice to differentiate people with Lewy body dementia from people with Alzheimer's disease, because dysautonomia is, of course, more prominent more frequent and troublesome patients with Lewy body dementia compared to Alzheimer's disease. So this is something, is also a diagnostic clue that we can use during our clinical activities. And then we have, and the spectrum that we have described for Parkinson's disease, the spectrum of gastrointestinal dysfunction, can be observed also in people with Lewy body dementia. In fact, we also think that the two diseases, Parkinson's disease and Lewy body dementia, are actually part of the same spectrum of disease. So there is a huge overlap between the two conditions, also in relation to gastrointestinal dysfunction. If we think about MSA, multiple system atrophy, here we know that it's again a synucleinopathy, but the abnormal deposits of alpha-synuclein at the level of the central nervous system are typically localized in the oligodendrocytes and not in neurons. And also there are some reports suggesting that this pathological accumulation of this protein can be also found in the peripheral nervous system of these subjects. And again, this is a neurodegenerative disease characterized by either cerebellar dysfunction or Parkinsonism associated with autonomic dysfunction, including gastrointestinal dysfunction. So here we can have everything, as well as in Parkinson, from dysphagia to delayed gastric emptying to constipation, also fecal incontinence is quite common here. And they tend to occur earlier and to be more severe compared to Parkinson's disease. And this is what we know mainly about synucleinopathies, other synucleinopathies, and gastrointestinal dysfunction.
Good, thank you. We are moving in another field where are not so many data, but I think it's relevant to know your opinion on gastrointestinal dysfunction in tauopathies.
Well, another interesting area that certainly needs to be better explored, because there is very little evidence on this topic, I'm thinking about PSP, which is a tauopathy, progressive supranuclear palsy, where one of the common and early features of the condition can be dysphagia. Dysphagia, which here may be multifactorial actually in origin as well. It might be related to the hyperextended posture of the neck, as well as to the cognitive impairment. But it's certainly something that we need to take into consideration when we manage patients with PSP, again, because is under-recognized and, if untreated, can lead to a serious complication.
Good, thank you. And we are coming to the end. Time is flying. The topic of gastrointestinal dysfunction, other movement disorders, could be a topic relevant for the clinical practice. I think there are no so many data. Perhaps you could comment on this.
Yes. I mean, if we want to complete the spectrum of diseases, we have talked about Parkinsonism and gastrointestinal dysfunction, including some atypical Parkinsonism. We can also think about chorea, and also in Huntington's disease, we might have some elements of gastrointestinal dysfunction. Also here, dysphagia can be quite prevalent and troublesome, again, under-recognized. And from a pathophysiological point of view, can be due to the altered sensory motor processing and the cognitive impairment, together with the motor impairment as well. So we can see that actually we can observe gastrointestinal dysfunction in different movement disorders, from Parkinsonism to chorea. area. And this is something that we need to take into consideration, because as neurologists, we are mainly focused on the neurological symptoms and signs, and we often forget that there might be some gastrointestinal symptoms and signs which might be equally troublesome for the patient, and that might have an impact on their quality of life if not well identified and treated.
Good, thank you. And a final word on take-home message, if you could sum up this topic of the gastrointestinal dysfunction in movement disorders as a field.
So gastrointestinal dysfunction is quite frequently associated with movement disorders. And this association can have several explanations, but certainly one element is the close link between the enteric nervous system and the central nervous system, so the gut-brain axis. And it is quite important to identify and manage gastrointestinal dysfunction in patients with movement disorders, because these symptoms can be troublesome, can be prevalent, can have an impact on the quality of life of patients with the movement disorders. Sometimes can even have an impact on the absorption and transport of the gold standard treatment for this condition. I'm thinking about Parkinson's disease. And certainly we need to do more in terms of research to better explore the possible gastrointestinal manifestation in other movement disorders other than Parkinson's disease, let's say, because certainly there is space and for exploring such a gap in the literature.
Good. Thank you very much, Dr. Valentina Letta. Thank you, Valentina Letta, for this very nice discussion, this very nice podcast. And really, I enjoyed very much and I learned many, many things. And I think, as you mentioned, Valentina, there is room for research and for collecting data and for the study. And this is actually an initiative and an invitation for joining the autonomic panel and this exciting field. Thank you once again, Valentina, and thank you, Ian, on behalf of the Autonomic Nervous System Disorders Scientific Panel for this opportunity to have this educational podcast. And there are already 100 very successful episodes. Goodbye and have a great day.
Thank you very much, Professor Fallu Pecurario, for having me and to all the EN organizing committee for the opportunity to be with you today.
This has been EAN Cast Weekly Neurology. Thank you for listening. Be sure to follow us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your preferred podcatcher for weekly updates from the European Academy of Neurology. You can also listen to this and all of our previous episodes on the EAN campus to gain points and become an EAN expert in any of our 29 neurological specialties. Simply become an EAN individual member to gain access. For more information, visit ean.org/membership. That's ean.org/membership. Thanks for listening. EANcast Weekly Neurology is your unbiased and independent source for educational and research-related neurological content. Although all content is provided by experts in their field, it should not be considered official medical advice.